Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Blog Talk family. This is Leslie Gist. You listen to the Antique E Show or the Gist of Freedom Blog Show, whichever name you prefer. Tonight we have a special guest. Her name is Antonia Badan. She is an actress and performs a one-woman show entitled Zora Returns to Harlem.
Reach out and touch.
For Antonia Badan, the performer of the one-woman show, Zora Returns. This is Antonia calling. Are you there?
Yes, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well, Antonia. Would you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, hello, audience. My name is Antonia Badon. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm here in New York and promoting and producing and touring the one woman play, Zora Returns to Harlem. The play is 15 character portrayals of the legendary Zora Neale Hurston. So you get a chance to see her in different 15 different phases of her life when she was.
Okay. Now, I know of Zora through Oprah Winfrey. Can you give us the story behind Zora and Oprah?
Yes. Well, actually, Oprah produced the one of her books, which was Their Eyes Are Watching God. She wrote that in 1934. So the play that I do actually gives you more of the background of her actual life story. So the beautiful thing about Zora and the most inspiring thing about Zora is that she was a very young girl who longed to go to school. And actually she was 26 years old when she actually had gone to high school for her first time. So she had to reinvent herself to look 16 to go to school. She went to Morgan Academy. She turned out to graduate from Barnard College, the first black woman to go to Barnard College and the first black woman to graduate.
Now, for our youngsters listening to the show, who is Zora Neale Hurston and why are we even talking about her?
Well, Zora Neale Hurston is one of the pioneers of the Harlem Renaissance. I know a lot of the young people know of Langston Hughes. They have heard of Garvey. And for some reason, sometimes Zora's name and the Zora's story is kind of in the background because Langston Hughes was very, very, very popular, a popular writer. So I think the younger people, they are familiar with Langston Hughes. They're familiar with Garvey and what little they might know about the Renaissance. But Zora was one of the women in the Renaissance that was really a strong force in perpetuating the black authentic voice of black Americans.
What made Zora unique? And I've seen the play. The play was phenomenal. I've seen it in New York, in Harlem. And you were outstanding. I felt like I was having a conversation with Zora.
Yeah.
And, it was awesome. But what I learned from your play is that she came from a historically black town.
Oh, yes. They're the first black town to incorporate in America. And her father was the pioneer and factor of that town getting incorporated. He was the preacher. He was the mayor of the town. So he did a lot. And that's why her town is actually as popular as it is. They also have a festival every year in honor of Zora.
Do you remember the name of the town?
Yes, Eatonville, Florida.
Now, you know there was an HBO movie that I watched right after I seen your play about her father in her town.
Wonderful. I didn't see that one.
Yes.
That was great.
For our listeners, you need to Google, what is the name of the town again?
Eatonville, Florida.
Google Eatonville. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Eatonville, Florida.
Okay, because they showed how the town was started and how they had to get these. They were one of the first towns to get street lamps, electrical street lamps. So I was just really amazed about the history, that how she was connected so deeply and why she had black pride from watching that movie as well as seeing your play.
And you know, the amazing thing is when she went to Howard, they were not actually, you know, she studied anthropology. They were not collecting American culture or history on African Americans. So Zora actually asked the professor, Professor Franz Boas, if she could actually start collecting the information to preserve the history and the culture for African Americans. And the Guggenheim Foundation also gave her a fellowship because her work was so important, along with all the other other cultures that they had already had a vast work of history for them. Our culture, had very little. So Zora actually went back home to her home in Eatonville to do the first section of her collecting. And after that, she went to Haiti. She went to Jamaica. She did the book that she wrote is called Tell My Horse. It comes out of Haiti. It deals with all the voodoo gods and the culture and every little aspect of a lot of the rituals that took place. This is in the 20s and the 30s that was so important to for our culture right now.
Right. You're from New Orleans, so you could relate to that.
Oh, yes. You know it. And Zorro actually traveled to New Orleans, which was, you know, she traveled a lot extensively in the South, and New Orleans was one of her first, well, she stopped in some little country towns in Alabama, and on her way, she, you know, went to New Orleans, because New Orleans had a real strong history of voodoo, you know, voodoo priestess and stuff like that.
Now, you also, in the play, you talk about her resentment towards her patrons, and being that she was an artist,
mm-hmm,
she wouldn't have that much money. Could you just
right.
give the audience a flavor of her relationship and what a patron artist relationship was like?
Right. Well, you know, Harlem, the artists in Harlem, Langston Hughes, Wallace Thurman, Conti Cullen, all the black artists survived because of patrons. And there are a few.
What is a patron?
A patron actually is like a talent manager. Like in now we call it a talent manager. You find an agent or a talent manager. But the patrons in the 20s and the 30s, they actually gave the artist money to survive so that they can really take the time to work and write the books that they needed, you know, they wanted them to write. So Langston and Zora and a few of the, you know, popular writers at that time all used to share in with the same patrons. And one of the famous patrons at the time was, honey, was Charlotte Osgood Mason III. She was a wealthy woman on Park Avenue. And Zora has
African-American woman?
No. There were no actually African-American patrons. They were all white. They were all very, very, very wealthy, extremely wealthy. But they really loved black art. They were just amazed by it. And so the writings, you know, the work, the writings of the visual arts, they were just overly drawn to it. And so
they were the backbone to the Harlem Renaissance? They were financiers?
Oh, yes. I remember having a conversation with Nabi. He's at the Black National Theater. And so when I was first doing Zora, I was taking my little presentations everywhere. And he said, yeah, you know, the Harlem Renaissance was a sponsored event. And I was like, sponsored, you know. But in a sense, he was saying that, you know, everybody literally had a sponsor. And they would not have been able to survive, or the work that you see on the shelves would not have ever been published, because most of the publications came from all the white publishing companies. Now, the NAACP had The Crisis, and the Urban League had Opportunity Magazine. So what actually helped catapult the Renaissance, the art and literary movement, because it was really a literary movement first, was Charles Johnson. Charles Weldon Johnson was at the Opportunity Magazine, was for Opportunity Magazine. And Elaine Locke actually was at Howard, and he wrote to Charles Weldon Johnson, and he told him about Zora. Now, he would always help the men writers, men artists, but he saw a particular, you know, he liked Zora, so he wrote to Charles, and he asked him to, you know, take a look at her. So Charles wrote to Zora when she was in Howard, and he asked her to submit something, so she submitted Drenched in Light, and he published it. It was our first national publication in the magazine. But who pioneered it was Dubois and Charles, you know, that little group, you know, like a little cluster of people would find these great writers, and they would use the NAACP and Opportunity Magazine to bring their work to the forefront, you know, so that
now,
people
could you hold
really
off one minute?
Mm-hmm.
Could you repeat? Because, you know, I want our listeners to really be able to write this down. What was the name of her first publication?
It was Drenched in Light. Drenched, yeah, in light. And it was through Opportunity Magazine, which was the magazine produced by the Urban League.
Okay. Now, you also told us a lot of information about the other black magazines. Could you just repeat those three again?
Crisis. the NAACP had the crisis, C-R-I-S-I-S, and we still have it. If they, you know, if you enrolled in the membership, you will get the, I think the crisis come every month.
Mm-hmm. And there was one more you mentioned.
Yeah, just the Crisis and Opportunity magazine were the two really popular. Now Zora and Langston and Wallace, they all got together in a rooming house and they published their first magazine, which was called Fire. But it got burned in that same house on it was in Harlem, a rooming house in Harlem. I think it was 136th Street.
You're telling me the magazine named Fire actually got burnt in a fire?
Yes, it did. I think there's only one actually copy of the first publication. I think they were able to save a few copies of the first publication, but I think, if I'm not mistaken. But I do have a little snippet of the show, of some of the scenes, if I can play it for you. I think it's like a little 30-second spot.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's see. Hold on. Maybe it all started when my mama died when I was 9. Boy, I was definitely my mama's girl. In Washington, D.C. I'm going to Howard University. It's the all-color school. It's the mecca for all the really important, like, scholarships going on in the country. Hey, y'all. Hey, nurse. To take it all that I could see. Oh, I was so overwhelmed that I said to the great spirit of house, oh, I thank you for taking me into your bosom. I promise you, I'll make you so proud of you. So, I joined the Zeta Phi Theta, wrote for the Stalin, and even named the college newspaper the Hilltop. Barnard turned out to be a new world for me. I met Franz Boas. Now, he's a leading anthropologist in 1925. He's liberal and he wants to study the Negro. The first thing I did was go over to Harlem and start measuring skulls. Can you imagine this colored girl standing on 125th Street with a pair of calipers measuring the size of folks' heads? Well, it was the time of the Harlem Renaissance. I mean to tell you, colored folks were soaring through the air like eagles. Honey, I was the original Goth Town Strutter.
They say
the West again. Oh, it's not again, beautiful. And me and Langston wanted to do a Broadway show. A collaboration. We were going to call it Miracle. But our project never did come off. And it wasn't because we didn't try. We just let those people have our thoughts. And when they started to get nice with the Negro, is when they had their damn depression.
And then the key was to walk. And there's no key to walk.
Well, you know I'm tired.
Hey, you still here? Shoot, shoot. Go home now. I'll be okay. But look, if you do think about me, all I want you to do is go down to that neighborhood bookstore. I'll be there. I'll be waiting on you.
Hey. Hello?
Excellent.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned in the clip
mm-hmm.
that you joined the Zeta Phi Beta.
Yes, he's a member of the Zeta Phi Beta. Definitely, definitely.
Now, I say that because your next show, which is when?
Saturday the 20th, Belmont Mansion. That's 2000 Belmont Parkway in Fairmont. Belmont Park. Belmont.
Right,
Belmont.
In Philadelphia, PA,
in Philadelphia,
right?
Yes.
Now, the reason why this performance is so special is because a bunch of Zetas sponsored your show, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Zeta Phi Beta sponsoring the show, the American Heritage Women Society, and Celebs Events is actually sponsoring this particular show. And it is a fundraiser. So please tell your friends and family members, bring the young ones. Let's just, you know, help raise money to preserve our culture, our history, and a great place.
Right. Now, this show came about is through the owner of the Belmont Mansion's daughter. She came and watched your performance.
Yes, Rebecca. I think Rebecca Johnson actually came. You actually brought her with you. After, you know, you had me on one of your shows before. I told you about the show at the George Faith on Firehouse Theater, and she came, and she was very impressed. She said she was at the edge of her seat, and she actually, you know, I gave her everything. She gave it to her mom, and her mom was excited about having us.
Yeah. Well, they're still excited. Philadelphia is waiting with bated breath. I know there's a bunch of Zoras. I mean, Zora Zetas will be there on Saturday. I will be there, of course, and several other people I know. I think we're going to have a great time, and you'll probably end up doing more shows in Philadelphia.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I think it's important to help preserve, organizations like that. The Belmont Mansion is a great, great place, and I think that as a community, it's our responsibility. You know, to do as much as we can to support them, as much as we can to help them raise money, because who else would they have, you know, us, you know, the community.
Right, right. We know that she was a Zeta. What else can you tell us about Zora?
There's a lot about her. Her life story is so massive. But I have a large adult following, and I'm always trying to tell adults to definitely bring the young ladies and young men, because her life is inspiring, because she actually, after her mom passed, you know, she actually lived in a really pretty, really nice 8-bedroom house, so that must have been pretty big for in the 20s. And after her mom passed, it just really tore the family apart, and Zora found herself almost orphaned. Almost orphaned means she was like, she would live with different people in the community of Edenville, going back and forth, because, you know, she was like a growing teenager, you know. And but her longing to go to school, I guess when you really want to do something in life, it happens. And her life shows that, her longing to go to school and just wanting to just see the world. Her life actually manifest itself exactly what she longed for as a young child. So it's inspiring for young kids to see that everything is possible. It's just beyond our imagination that this lady with no money went to Barnard College. You know, she collected travel across the country with other organizations and other fellowships and foundations sponsoring her. None of her travels was with her own money. Her life in Harlem, the year she lived in Harlem, was not with her own money. She did work little end jobs when she was at Howard, but it wasn't like real money to survive. So her survival money came from the patrons who actually gave her money to live. And, you know, she didn't make a lot of money. As everybody knows, Zora did not make a lot of money. I think the largest sum of money she made was like $900 for one of her books. But her lifespan and the information that she brings to our culture, the history that she's collected for our culture, is just unbelievable. It's just so overwhelming.
Yeah,
it's like,
I have a collection. I have a 6-cassette collection set in my collection of Zora. She went into the backwoods and got a bunch of folklore tales of African Americans.
Yes.
And, I have a clip. I couldn't download your clip or mine for some reason.
Oh, wow.
So that's why we had to endure through yours. But, yes, she has some funny folklore tales. And, they're hilarious, but she deserves them.
Yes, and actually, I guess you have, like, the same one that I have where she sung a lot of them. She would learn the songs and sing the songs. The work is just so amazing because what she brings, you know, during the time of the 20s, it was Elaine Locke. They all were creating this thing called the New Negro, and the New Negro were people that spoke very well. They were articulate, so they were bringing on a whole new genre, a whole new era of people. And what Zora was fighting for was, listen, the world, black people, we have an authentic voice. Let's not lose it. You know, there's a time for speaking very well. There's a time for it, but please let's not lose the voice. Let's not lose our culture and our identity getting caught up. So that's why she was always fighting. She loved that. Yes, she loved folklore. She loved it. I mean, she just thought it was the greatest thing. And Zora was a linguistic, so she was very well read. Mm-hmm. She was very smart.
Now, in your play, you talk about a feud between her and another writer, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes,
Elaine
Locke. Well, actually, it was a feud. Well, what happened was that you got these writers who just actually pulling together all their resources, coming together to publish their first magazine, Fire, which was really hard. They were actually trying to put their monies together, which monies they had. And after they all really start writing and just having these really, you know, they had nice work published, the white community came in and they were asking each one of them to critique each other's book. So now you got the same people that came together finding so much fault with each other. So, of course, she had a big falling out with Elaine Locke. Of course, she had a huge falling out with Langston Hughes. I think everybody knows that story. And supposedly they never spoke again. But if you read along, it's just that I think time, and they were so far apart that the relationship didn't really get back to like they were, like best of friends. So Elaine Locke, Wallace Thurman, they all had their little fights by the 30s. They were like fighting and feuding. They were calling each other's work, you know. They
right.
Had so much, yeah.
Okay, Antonia, we have some callers online. Let's see if they have any questions or if they're going to be shy as usual.
Underground Railroad Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Hi, Ms. Johnson.
Yes, how are you?
This is Leslie, and you have Antonia on.
How wonderful.
Hi, Ms. Johnson.
Yes, dear. We're so excited about you coming on Saturday.
Oh, yes, we're really excited to come.
Do you play? Oh.
We have a great show there. This is an incredible show for the Philadelphia community and for your museum. And we
yes.
hope to come back and help you raise more money.
And that's what we're about. And, you know, Zora Neale Hurston was my sorority sister, Zeta Phi Beta sorority.
Yes, yes.
So that's really a real, real exciting thing.
Can you tell us more about your mansion while you're on?
I certainly can. It is, you know, the Underground Railroad Museum that we discovered 7 years ago, which was a connection to the slavery era, and which was a surprise because we've been here, will be 24 years, 25. Next year we'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary. And so we had no idea when we took over Belmont Mansion in Fairmount Park that it was a connection. We had opened it up for women's organizations to meet, and we rented out for weddings, receptions, and private parties, but no connection whatsoever. Until we had a student from Temple University who came here to visit and wanted to do a story on the Belmont Mansion. And when she went into the historical archives, she discovered Cornelia Wells, who was a slave girl that lived here, come to find out that the president of the Abolition Society was the owner of Belmont Mansion, Judge Richard Peters from Liverpool, England. So that opened up the whole world of history that no one ever knew here in Philadelphia, that this mansion was a connection. And, of course, after all the archives and the documentation and all that pertained to being certified as as a legitimate Underground Railroad museum through the National Underground Railroad Museum Center in Cincinnati, Ohio, who proclaimed us, also the Smithsonian Institute, and all other historical societies. So we operate not only as a Underground Railroad Museum, which was restored 5 years ago and became a museum, $3.5 million operation, which was done as a magnificent building. And so it's 350 years old, and it's going to be here another 350. We're the first and only African-American women to maintain a historic house in the park.
Wow.
So we operate every day. We open every day except Monday. Today we had about 75 people who toured, and yesterday we had over 120-some, and these were young school children coming in groups, because what we aim to do here is to teach our children about the history of the slavery era.
Wow. Now, do you find an interest growing in your museum?
Yes, we do.
Great.
The only thing that I don't, I'm not too happy with, and I'm trying to get our African-American people to become very cognizant of our history. So we find that the best way to go that way is go through our children and our young people who will go home very excited about this whole history, and talk to their parents, and the parents have told us that. We didn't even know, they said, you know, well, why, you know, and we just go on and on. And, but the kids have become very enthusiastic about
very
the
good.
History. Yes.
Now, what can you tell us about Zora, about what you know about
what
Zora?
What can I tell you about Zora? I've always known Zora to be a woman of her journalism, her books. What is the one that was my first, what is that, the one that, God, and so then when I became a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, which I'm celebrating 25 years of that, I knew that Zora Neale Hurston was my sorority sister, and I've always admired her dress because I'm a woman who dresses, and I've always appreciated that in her class and her dignity. So I really do appreciate, and that's why I'm so excited about seeing this play, you know?
Right.
We have
right. What did Rebecca tell you about the play?
Well, she didn't tell me too much because she knows that I really want to see it, and I don't like to be told too much like that. I want to be, you know, absolutely flabbergasted by it all. So she hasn't told me too much. All she tells me, Mom, you can't miss this. This is the most exciting, fantastic play you will ever want to see. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
You won't be disappointed, right, Antonia?
I know, and I'm getting a lot of calls, so I hope we're going to have a full house. You know, it's a small auditorium, not auditorium, but a banquet room that we revert to an auditorium. So and we hope to have a full house. But the other thing is that what I had done, would like to suggest, and I'll do that to you, Antonia, when you come, where we can really go out and to the whole Philadelphia community.
Yes.
I'll talk about that with
you. Can you give the phone number for tickets and all that information?
It's 215-878-8844. It's the Fairmount Park, Belmont Mansion in Fairmount Park, Philadelphia. Just call, and we'll reserve your name because it's, you know, limited seating, and because we're going to have to cut off at a certain level. And then we'll let you know. Tickets are $30, okay. Children, young people, 16 and older, are $15. So we encourage them.
And I would like the audience to know the writer of this play is Lawrence Holder. He wrote the play When Chicken Comes Home to Roost.
Yes.
And he's an incredible writer. And if I'm not mistaken, the director, Greg Freelon, is actually from Philadelphia.
Yes, I know the family.
Yes,
I know the family, the Freelon family, yes.
Yes, he actually directed my play. He's an incredible director. I just owe him a lot. He actually, you know, you can do so much as an artist and create so much, but you do need a director to really put it together and really bring the clarity to your work.
Exactly.
With Mr. Holder and Mr. Freelon, I think this piece is going to take, you know, it's just going to be incredible. I just came from Strasbourg University on the 8th, where they had a nice audience to see the play, and I hope to continue doing the college circuit.
Oh, that's great.
And do many more galleries.
Well, I think it's very exciting. I think it's a history that needs to be told, and we must not forget, you know, our legacy.
Right.
That is so important.
Right. Can you give us your website, both of you?
www.belmontmansion.org.
Okay. And
that's
you
the website. You want my email?
Okay, email.
It's bthorn, B-T-H-O-R-N. 1653@AOL.com.
All right. Antonia?
My website is www.dovetailactors.org, and the email is ZoraReturns1@Verizon.net.
Okay.
So we're ready for this Saturday at 3 p.m.
Leslie, are you coming?
Yes, I will be there. I can't wait.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be there. I think this is going to be the beginning of a great relationship.
I think so. I really do. I know it is. Mm-hmm.
Yes, when I couldn't wait for Rebecca to see the play, and being that she lives in New York, I thought it was ideal. And and she came.
And my granddaughter lives in New York, and she's an actress. You know, Korea Booker, and I'm hoping that she will come down to see the play so she can see Antonio in action. Okay?
Definitely. We'll definitely get a chance to rekindle the spirit with Elaine Lachman and Zora in Philly, because Elaine Lachman is from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. This is wonderful.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so thank you, Ms. Thornton, Ms. Thornton Johnson, for giving us a call, and we will see you Saturday.
All right.
All righty.
All right, Antonio, take care. Be careful. Yes. You know, we thought the snow was going to stop us, you know, and we'd have to postpone it, but I think we're pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
Those that can come. Those that can't come, we're just going to have a fantastic time, and they're going to miss it.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Antonia, we're down to our last 3 minutes.
Yes.
If Zora was alive, how do you think she would promote your show, and what would she say?
Well, honey, I think Zora would be on the front line for the show. One, because we have such a parallel.
Well, I'm going to re-ask the question. Could you please go into character and promote this show as if you were Zora?
Okay, I'll go right into it. Honey, it's the time of the Harlem Renaissance. I mean to tell you, the color folks were soaring through the air like eagles. There was Claude McKay. Hey, honey, you back? Conti Colored. Ooh, you're looking so good. Wallace, Thurman, Poe, and Dubois. Ooh, I knew them all. And we were all thriving, growing, finding out all about ourselves on all different levels. Honey, I was grand, and I used to strut. I was probably the original Dogtown Strutter. That was her favorite time. She loved Harlem. She loved the Renaissance era. I think she would definitely start like that.
Oh, wow. Well, you are phenomenal. You're doing a great job for Zora. I know she would be proud of you if she could see this show. And as you heard, Mrs. Thornton Johnson is waiting for you to perform this Saturday at 3 p.m. And do you know the phone number offhand?
No, I don't.
1215. She hung up, so I can't see it. Well, go to the website and visit the website, and you'll get all the information at www.belmontmansion.org or at your website.
Yes. No, it's not actually on my website.
It's not on your website? Okay.
If
you could go
if you
to
put it,
Zora's Facebook.
Yes,
go to your
Facebook,
right, Antonia?
Yes. You can go to my Facebook, Star and Antonia Badon on Facebook.com.
Say it a little slower.
Starring Antonia Badon, Badon, at Facebook.com.
All right. All right. I will see you on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Belmont Mansion in Philadelphia, and we're going to have a great time.
Definitely. Bye.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thank you for having me. Good night. Bye.
Okay.
Reach out and touch.